Representative Marsh is paying dues for the chancellor, who used an acronym, and if any other acronyms are used, you'll be paying dues. So, did I do that right?
Yes, you might also remind them of cell phones.
Co-chair is helping me here. If you have a cell phone, be sure and turn it off.
I might call.
Thank you. There's another part to that. Representative Marsh has numbers and will call. With the housekeeping issues done, we would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2478.
House Bill 2478 creates a legislative task force to study unfunded educational mandates in elementary and secondary schools, declares an emergency, effective on passage. Our primary sponsor is Representative Nelson, and she's not here. She's on her way. We might want to stand at ease until she gets here. All right. Yep.
Representative Nielsen is on her way down, and we'll just take a brief hiatus.
I think we forgot to finish the rest of the story, and that was if they use acronyms without explaining them first, then they pay a dollar, and the same with the cell phones. Did we clarify that?
We just did.
Thank you.
And between the co-chairs, we'll get this meeting rolling. Anything else, Representative Miller?
Well, I thought you were doing a fine job.
So far.
You didn't know, though. You just thought.
I believe Representative Farr is also testifying on a bill, and she'll be here directly. Being a legislative process, silence is hard to tolerate.
That's among themselves.
I'm not sure where she's coming from. Did you know where she's coming from?
The office.
Oh.
It just should be a few minutes.
Should I sing?
There you go.
Yes.
Do you want me to go outside?
Yes.
Mike's up.
Everything else.
And we have a fine of a dollar a minute.
Well, I'll pay it as long as it goes to the veterans fund.
Education fund.
I don't know if you noticed, but there are six gentlemen.
I noticed that, and I was going to say something about that right now.
We're glad to see you, Representative Nelson Reed. You are the first one to testify on House Bill 2478.
Thank you, good chair. Is this microphone not working either?
It is working.
See, what happened yesterday, I testified in another committee, and it was a majority of men, just like out on the House floor, and my microphone didn't work either in the committee. I figure you men have something to do with this, probably Senator Representative Loom.
Loom.
The loom and loom. That's it. Well, good committee members, it's an honor to be here with you today, and I appreciate this opportunity to testify before you on behalf of House Bill 2478. And for those of you who are new, in fact, everybody except Representative Marsh, this will be possibly a new venture for you. For as long as I've been in the legislature, I have worked to end unfunded mandates that we so generously bestow upon our schools. And I didn't think it was necessary, but I could provide you. I didn't want to speak down to you, but if you don't have a copy of the mandates on education, K through 12 particularly, it's a volume. It's like one of those volumes of statutes over there, just about. I can certainly provide it to you so that you'll see the extent of how generous we've been in disciplining the schools, as if none of them have good sense to know what they're doing in the best interest of our children. Anyway, 6 years ago, I worked with two individuals whom I really greatly respect, Dr. Paula Radish, who is the superintendent of the Newburgh Schools, and Dr. Betty Youngblood, who was the president of Western Oregon University at Monmouth at the time. And I asked them to let me know what the cost of unfunded mandates is on our schools. And after I received their studies back, I was just in shock to realize that because of what we've done by imposing all of these to-dos and you wills and no, not you mays, I was shocked to find that it was about 8 to 10% of the budget. So to bring it closer to home for anybody except those of you who live in Portland, in my school district, to McMinnville High School, for example, that's $3.5 million. For Newburgh School, that's $3 million. And you can, you know, for my smaller rural schools, I have 7 school districts in my district. You know, that's a $700,000 to a small rural school. Lot of money. So I have asked continuously if we could please have a review of these unfunded mandates and eliminate them. On my way here, I was stopped at the elevator and asked to sign a bill that would eliminate SIM and CAM, two of the mandates, particularly SIM. CAM may or may not be, depending on how you look at the rules. But that's give you an example. Another example, and for those who don't know, I was a teacher. I taught on the college level and I taught on the high school level. And then during the interim, I wanted to see how education was moving along. So I went back to college at Western and got my elementary credential, having started a new television program called Readers Are Leaders. And I wanted to see what we were doing in our teacher education program, and I also wanted to find out currently what we're doing in our grade schools. There I found, by talking with numerous administrators who came to take those same tests that I took for credentialing, that we do a lot of things that they think are totally unnecessary. And I find they're much like any other individual who's not the chief of the chiefs in an environment, whether it's in the military or in business. Teachers are often hesitant to speak because of possible repercussions. But in the freedom of Western Oregon University, where everybody was in the teaching business, they were quick to tell me what they felt should be eliminated. Portfolios, for example. And they would say, Donna, you know, we established these portfolios, and you know, when they look at them, at the end of the year, when they bring the next portfolios of those students to replace the previous ones. I mean, just things like that. And when we consider, and I don't have a specific scientific approach. I only have what the schools have told me. They say it takes 20% of the time of our teachers out of the classroom to live with all these unfunded mandates, whether it's preparing students for testing, preparing themselves for testing, preparing reports that we've made critical, preparing for certain types of training that they have to take to synchronize with the IDEA or the exceptional students. It's unbelievable. So, you know, once again, we want our dollars well spent in the classroom, but yet we're imposing the mandates that take the teachers out of classrooms and also take corresponding amount of money out of their budgets. So instead of asking the legislature to do it this time, in talking with several individuals in all different phases of education, they said they felt it was a good idea that we just establish a task force instead. And, you know, my dream was that we would have a task force that would be of no cost to the legislature. Those of us who are committed to a project, you know, we don't have to be compensated, but we could totally focus for however long is necessary to evaluate these mandates and relieve them. And I think it's especially important now, since we have the No Child Left Behind Act, and we have those mandates as well. I think it's even more appropriate that we look at these. So, for what it's worth, after meeting with several individuals, they came up with this synopsis. And just briefly, without a lot of rulemaking, it just simply says the President of the Senate will appoint two members of, you know, one from each party, two members who are professional educators, two members who have financial expertise and some experience with the public education system, and the Speaker will do the same. And we can work with the various educational entities and evaluate, come up with a process, get a agreement, and then proceed. And let me just give you one final example. In one of my recent courses, we evaluated the test for the 10th graders across the nation. It was our state. It was a broad spectrum. And I sat at a table, I think, with about 10 teachers from across the state, and they all said, well, Donna, surely there's one paper in here that we would give a 6, which is the top rating when you rate these tests. Well, finally, my last paper was a 6, and I passed it to the teacher next to me and left. This was, I think we graded 436 papers, something like that, that I'd be willing to subpoena to show you, I mean, if it were necessary to show you what I'm talking about. But out of all these papers, I mean, I wouldn't have hired one student. These are 10th graders getting ready to go to college, getting ready to graduate, looking for employment. And I've probably hired 10,000 students in my professional career in the past. These papers showed these individuals couldn't write a complete sentence, could not spell, couldn't punctuate, couldn't carry a complete thought on one page. And after all, they chose the topic. We were just appalled. Well, later, about 2 weeks later, I met the teacher that I had handed off the one great paper to, and she said, I just want to let you know that wasn't a 6. A big disappointment out of numerous papers we graded. So I explained to Susan Castile's organization that we're greatly remiss because we don't have remedial programs. We're doing all the testing, but we have no remedial required work. My recommendation to them at that level was those students in fifth grade should immediately, you know, be going into at least 6 weeks of remedial work. That just happens to be one of my majors. But I was just appalled to think that, you know, they couldn't fill out an application or, you know, couldn't write a one-page letter. So we have a lot of work to do. It shouldn't be a mandate. That's a basic, and is what I'm saying. So as we look at some of these things, we say, why do we have these mandates? If we have them, and we're not putting them to a practical use, it's not only expensive in the financial area, it's expensive in the lives of these children, because we're not doing what's right. So whether this is the right format for a task force, I don't know. All I know is, needs to be done, needs to be done now. I mean, saving 8 to 10% of a school's budget, either endorsing the activities that are taking place, providing there is a purpose for them, or getting rid of them because we have just continued to require numerous functions that are unnecessary and expensive, and our children aren't getting excellence in education, and we got to take our part of the responsibility. Be happy to accept any questions.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Are there questions? Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Representative Nielsen. Could you give us a specific what are the some of the mandates that we need to know?
Yes. Yes, I certainly will. In fact, and I'll just give you a copy of the whole package that was prepared by Legislative Council. I don't know how many we added over the last year. I think I have it current to 2004. But mandates like the SIM and the CAM, the portfolios, these are examples of requirements.
Okay. Thank you.
ironically, we don't have one that says you will spend 85% of your money in the classroom. I mean, it's amazing to me. We have all these mandates, but none where the parents and the public seem to think, you know, the dollars should be spent.
Any further questions for Representative Nelson? Representative March.
Thank you.
And he's the only one that's heard this before.
And thank you, Representative Nelson, for coming. And, you know, I know it's one of the concerns of the committee is looking at this issue. And part of it, part of the question is, why not have the interim education committee look at this instead of having a task force? And then the second one, which is more of a technical one, the Senate has allowed two members, the House three, and it seems a little biased there.
Well, there's more of us.
Well, then we should have four.
I agree.
But as the first question.
You know, it doesn't matter. Excuse me, Chair Flores and Representative Marsh. It doesn't matter to me. I know this committee has tremendous responsibilities during the interim also. My hope is that it would be a committee that did only this, because it is huge. And also we'll have to decide how far we're going to go. We're going, like I, on to the college level. As I told you, it's almost the same cost, like Dr. Youngblood proved at Western. You know, it may be we'd have to divide it up if we were going to take more than one level. If we're going to take community colleges, you know, universities and K-12. I just think it's a huge task, and I, you know, if this committee wants to undertake it, great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
I would ask
also that the packet of information that you referenced with Representative Lim, if you would make that available to
our administrator,
Jim Keller.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. All right, thank you so much.
I'm sorry you are not done yet.
Oh, okay.
Command performance here, Representative Dalton.
Okay.
Yes, Representative Nelson, would you have this task force look at time as well as money, or is this...
Absolutely. Any resource, total resources, as a matter of fact. You know, time, talent, and treasure, including capital assets. Or the six M's, as I call them, management, money, the men and women, that's the staff, machines, material, and the marketplace, that's the client. Thank you very much. We need to inspect what we expect and review results.
Thank you.
Measure what we want to manage. Thank you.
More M's. Was there anyone else who would like to give comment or testimony on House Bill 2478? Seeing none, then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2478. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2554. Mr. Keller, would you give us a overview?
Yes, ma'am. House Bill 2554 transfers program that provides financial assistance for child care costs to low-income student families from Department of Human Services to Oregon Student Assistant Commission. Creates student child care program in Oregon Student Assistant Commission. Transfers money for program from Department of Human Services to Oregon Student Assistant Commission. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2005, and enhances subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. Representative Dalto.
Madam Chair, I might invite Morgan Cowling with the Oregon Students Association to participate with me. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Billy Dalto, and I represent Oregon House District 21 here in Salem. And as I walked up to the podium here, I saw the good Representative Lim from East Multnomah County, and I got excited because I thought to myself, not only is this the Education Committee, but you could think about it as the Education and Economic Development Committee, as Representative Lim chairs the Trade and Economic Development Committee, because I've always believed that there is a tremendous intersection between Oregon's economy and Oregon's system of education. it's a little bit off the subject, and I'll get back onto the subject here, but we really cannot talk about having a strong and sustainable economy unless we have an excellent education system that produces top-tier talent to attract employers here so that we can have a number of great jobs for the people who live here. And so education and the economy are so very much intertwined. And that's one of the reasons why this bill is so important. And I really appreciate you taking up House Bill 2554 as soon as possible. And what this is, the child care block grant. This child care block grant is critical because you have a group of students, academics, who want to go to school, want to get their degrees, complete their degrees, so that they are in the best possible position to work, to grow in their careers, to make money and to contribute to society, but also to be good parents to their children. And one of the impediments at times to be able to go to school, to work, is the issue of child care. And, you know, this is a very real situation. People have children, and they need to be able to have the resources to go to school or to work and do what they need to do so that they're contributing. And child care is an essential component to education if you are a student. And so we've worked on this. The legislature has taken up this issue. There's a program in place. The block grant already serves a number of students, 230 families, but there are 700 families, more than 700 families on the waiting list. And so could you imagine if you wanted to go to school, you wanted to complete your education, maybe you were 6 months or a year away from getting that degree so that you can move up in the pay scale, move up in your career, but you can't get there because you don't have the assistance to be able to have the child care so that you can focus on your educational responsibilities. I mean, that's just a heartbreaking situation, and it's a reality for hundreds and hundreds of families in Oregon. And so we are doing what we can to help people have that child care, but we're not doing enough. And so we have, over the past few years as a state, put more resources into this child care. But there are some struggles with the way that we deploy this child care. The struggles is we think that it might be more appropriate to have this child care block grant program administered within the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, as there's a more direct sort of nexus between that child care that's related specifically to students and the students who are relying on it. And the Department of Human Services is a very large agency with a humongous budget and 10,000 employees, and it's numerous programs to help Oregonians, and they have a wide range of missions and programs. And I think that a program like this loses its priority when it's put in with the Department of Human Services that has myriad priorities. Make sure my grammar is correct. So anyway, we thought that if we remove this from the Department of Human Services and place it in the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which is ably led by Mr. Brian Clem, who you'll hear from very shortly, has a singular focus in mission. The singular focus is to help students manage the cost of education. And this is one of those costs that they have to manage, the cost for child care. So with that, you know, there are plenty of smarter people than I am to talk to you about this bill. But I really urge your passage. This is something the legislature has supported in the past. We're just trying to refine how we provide these services to students so those students can stop worrying about health, child care, and start worrying about finishing their education and taking their exams so they can move on. So thank you very much. And I didn't have any questions, or have Morgan visit with us.
Well, let's hear from Ms. Cowling, and then we'll entertain questions.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chair Flores and members of the committee. I'm going to echo much of what Representative Dalto said, but I'm going to give a little background as well on some of the rationale that we looked at when we were trying to find a location for this program. My name is Morgan, and I'm the Legislative Director of the Oregon Student Association. The Oregon Student Association, which represents over 100,000 students in the Oregon University System, Lane Community College, and OHSU, Oregon Health and Sciences University, strongly supports House Bill 2554, which would move the Student Child Care Program from the Department of Human Services, DHS, to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, or OSAC. The Oregon Student Association has worked closely with Representative Dalto's office to introduce this bill for two primary reasons. The first is that this program has repeatedly been slated for elimination by the Department of Human Services, and the second reason is that the program aligns better with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission's mission. I would like to start out by giving you a little background on the Oregon the student child care program, which as Representative Dalto mentioned, was used to be called the student child care block grants. The student child care program was implemented in 1991 upon the recommendation of an interagency task force charged with allocating a federal block grant called the Child Care and Development Block Grant. Several targeted populations were defined, including student parents, and the Child Care Division of the Employment Department began managing programs that serve these populations. Throughout the mid-90s, discussions continued regarding where the best place to house this program would be. The program was still receiving its funding primarily through the federal block grant, but administration had been shifted to the Child Care Division, CCD, and Adult and Family Services in DHS. The student child care program currently resides in the Children, Adults, and Families Division of DHS and is funded solely with general fund dollars. The last 4 years of this program have been fairly tumultuous. When DHS submitted their budget to the governor's office last summer, the student child care program was at the top of their programs to be cut list. When the Children, Adults, and Families Division of DHS gave their 10% reduction list to the Human Services Subcommittee of the Ways and Means a couple of weeks ago, the student child care program was at the top of their reduction list. We realize that DHS supports vulnerable populations, and we believe this trend exists because this program simply does not fit with other programs that DHS administers. This is why we support moving the program from DHS to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. When we were researching options for potential homes for the student child care program, we picked the Oregon Student Assistance Commission for several reasons. The first is that this program fits into OSAC's mission of assisting Oregonians and their families to help to and their families to post-secondary education. The goal of this program is to help students gain a post-secondary education degree by helping them afford child care. The second reason this agency made sense was that they have a long history of working with student populations and are familiar with the timelines that work for students. OSEC, as you're probably familiar, distributes the Oregon Opportunity Grant and administers over 300 private scholarships as well. The third reason that OSEC is a viable alternative is that students are familiar with the student financial aid structures. Over the past 4 years, we have worked with students who never would have learned about this program without the help of knowledgeable child care or knowledgeable campus child care providers. As a statewide program, this child care assistance is available for campuses without child care readily available, but they may not know about the program. Hopefully, this can be remedied by moving the program. As a final thought, we have been working closely with the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission and understand that both agencies will support this move if we put off the implementation date for 1 year so that it would spend half of the biennium at the Department of Human Services and then transfer to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission halfway through the biennium. We would support an amendment changing the date of implementation to ensure a smooth transition and to make sure there's no harm to students during the transition of this program. Please help us support the long-term viability of this program and make this program more user-friendly for students by giving this bill a work session and approving the move from DHS to OSAC. Thank you for your time and consideration of this important issue for students.
Thank you, Ms. Kelling. Are there any questions for either Representative Dalto or Ms. Kelling? Representative March, then Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't care who answers it, I've forgotten now how much is that federal block grant in round numbers?
Madam Chair, Representative March, it currently doesn't receive any federal funding. When it started, it received federal funding. I believe at its high point, it received anywhere from $2.3 to $2.5 million, but now it's solely funded by State General Fund.
Thank you.
And the State Fund appropriation is about $1 million.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Lin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this solely for the public universities, or does it include the private universities also?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, this program is any student in post-secondary education is eligible for this program, whether it be two-year, four-year, public, or private.
Okay, so all inclusive.
Yes.
Thank you. And a second question. You need to convince me that the administrative cost how much is the administration cost under the Human Services Department, and when it's moved to the OSAC, how much will it cost? Do you spend more or less of the administering of this program?
Chair Flores, Representative Lim, it is my understanding that the Department of Human Services has been administering this program with zero administrative costs, and they've built it into existing structures. In talking with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, it's my understanding as well that if this is administered like the Oregon Opportunity Grant, that they could do it with no additional administrative funds as well.
Okay, so there will be no cost at all in the administering of this fund.
The $1 million goes for all of the child care, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Further questions?
Madam Chair, a request? Thank you, Madam Chair. If indeed it is your decision to move this bill at some point, I would ask that staff request an amendment to delay the implementation date so that we can iron out that transition if it hasn't already been requested.
No, that it has not been. Actually, that was going to be my question to you. Who will be submitting the Dash 1 amendment? So you're requesting staff administrator.
Madam Chair, sure. Unless you want me to bring it, I'm not sure.
We'll coordinate.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you as well.
Thanks very much.
And I'd be happy to request it if it's preferable. It's up to you.
Thank you.
Okay. And then one more question I have.
Representative Lim.
And this Section 2. Line 14, it said that if there's any the dispute, the governor is the final decision. Why is the governor coming into a decision in this matter?
Chair Flores, Representative Lim, this is the version that we got back from Legislative Council and that we've submitted, and so I don't have a good answer for that. I can research that.
Representative March might have an offer.
I actually, in looking at transferring some other programs, this is pretty standard language. That's when you have programs that are underneath the purview of the governor's office.
Boilerplate language, perhaps, is the answer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll coordinate on Dash 1 amendment.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Sure.
One last thing. This is a critical component of the Oregon Women's Health and Wellness Alliance and their efforts for the 2005 session. So rest assured, this is yet another way that you can help women in this state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Marge Reinhart.
Good afternoon, Chair Flores, members of the committee. My name for the record is Marge Reinhart. I am the administrator for the Office for Self-Sufficiency Programs within the Department of Human Services. I appreciate your time this afternoon to testify with respect to House Bill 2554. And actually, Representative Dalto and Morgan have, I think, covered much of the information that I wanted to cover, that I would like to highlight just a couple of things for you. The department, in response to Representative Lim's question, it is, Morgan was correct, the department does administer this program. We use similar eligibility and processing elements that we use for the employment-related daycare program. And that is how we are able to use existing resources in order to limit the administrative cost. So that are provided within the student block grant or student daycare program. Daycare providers are paid through the same system as providers for our clients who are working and income eligible to receive those services. They do pass a criminal record and a child protective service inspection as part of that listing process, and we've incorporated that into our processes for the student daycare portion as well. Because there's one Representative Dalto did like I say, did an admirable job of explaining the program. There's one thing that he may not have been aware of, and that's that I would like to clarify that. We do currently serve a few more than 200 people in the program, 200 students. Our waiting list had been around 700. We recently, because of the funding limitations, that is the way we've operated the program, we recently sent applications and letters to a number of people on that waiting list and are processing their applications currently. The waiting list is now at about 500 rather than the 700. So we do expect to bring, we received about 100 applications back, and so we will be processing those, and that will increase the numbers of people currently being served by the program. As Representative Flores and Morgan pointed out, we have been working closely with the commission in sort of clarifying the transition of this program, and so we would like to support the amendment that Representative Dalto will be introducing to transition the program to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission effective July 1. We will work with the commission and staff between now and then to assure that that transition is smooth, and we'll work beyond that time as necessary to make sure that that it's consistently operated to the benefit of these students. So thank you for your time. I will entertain questions or turn this over to Margie Lau for additional testimony, whichever you would prefer.
I have a quick question for you, and so just for clarification and for the record, Department of Human Services is supportive of this bill with the Dash 1 amendments as proposed or as being discussed.
Chair Flores, that's correct.
Thank you.
One question, Madam Chair.
Representative Lim.
According to the testimony given to us, one of the reasons why they want to move from the THS to the OSAC is because THS sought to eliminate the state funds for this program. And why this program is the first to go in case if there is an elimination. Maybe that was a fear.
Chair Flores and Representative Lim, I hesitate to speak for either the commission or the student association. What I would say is that, as Representative Dalto mentioned, the Department of Human Services is a large and diverse organization with a lot of funding streams and complexities around our funding, and this is a small part. We believe that it's an important part. It's one that we've administered, and we believe we've administered effectively for some time, but it is a very small part and a general funded small part of our organization. So, again, I would probably defer to either Margie or Morgan to address that from their perspective.
Thank you.
Representative Roblin.
Just a quick question about what is the average grant? I mean, how much are we talking about a parent getting?
Chair Flores, Representative Roblin. I will need to get back to you on that. I don't have that specifically for the student daycare. The way that the program is structured, the amounts vary based on the income that the individual has and the number of children they have and the area of the state in which they reside or receive daycare. And there are a number of complexities. Within the employment-related daycare, the average cost per case for us is around $380. I can check and see. Excuse me. It's yes, thanks to my staff. It is a bit higher for the student daycare.
Thank you. Oh, did you have a question? Representative Dollar.
I need some help. Social studies teacher, not a math teacher. But the program is funded at $1 million. And you provided service to 200 children? 200 children or 200 families?
Families.
It's 5,000 a family. Am I?
Okay. I'm not a math teacher either, Representative.
We'll struggle together.
Well, there.
Could you give me some notion of that? That seems high to me.
Chair Flores and Representative Gollum, I can give you a bit of that, and I can provide more if you need it. The program, as Morgan mentioned, the program has been rather volatile or tumultuous, I think were her words, over the last, beginning with last biennium, and then extending through special sessions and ballot measure 30 and all of our other financial issues, we have, the program has been geared down, geared up again, sort of, I guess, I can't think of the word, but, you know, sort of held at bay with existing. So there's been great fluctuation in the number of families served by the program. That is why we have these additional 100 people coming in. So our funding, the balancing act, if you will, of balancing our funding against the need, you know, we're having to do that balancing act with some regularity. And as I mentioned in response to Representative Roblin, their question, the level of payment varies as well. So we are sort of constantly assessing the program expenditures against the allocations that we have. The program did gear up late again, so it didn't operate this entire biennium for the $1 million. So we didn't have funding that was, you know, steady and consistent throughout that time. And I didn't bring the dates with me, and I can't think off the top of my head when we geared up and geared down for that. But that in general is the response, and I can get you more detail if you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Representative Roblin.
I'll just ask a clarifying question to along the same line. And part of what you're saying is you may not have expended that full $1 million on the people that we've had due to the different things that have happened over the last year or so.
Chair Flores and Representative Roblin, that is true. It is also true that we didn't have the full, yes.
Why don't we go ahead and we might have some of our further questions addressed.
Good afternoon, Chair Flores and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Margie Loudman, and I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. We have had a number of discussions with the folks at the Department of Human Services and with the student organizations who are strongly interested in this piece of legislation, and agree with what all of the parties have said in terms of the transition process to modify that to be July 1st of 2006. We intend to work very closely with the staff at DHS for the coming months in order to assure a smooth and seamless transition as the program moves from one organization to another. We do not want to see services disrupted to any of the student participants. Our information on outcomes shows that a relatively discrete amount of resources can make a tremendous difference in a student's life. The work that we've been doing at looking at the outcomes for the Oregon Opportunity Grant show that grant of $1,200 to $1,500 for very low-income families makes a 20% difference in the degree completion rate for those students. So we recognize how important a small amount of resources can make such a tremendous difference in not just that student's life, but their entire family's life. So we think that this is an important program and we want to make sure there's not any discontinuity as the program would move from one to the other. We will be establishing an advisory group to help steer that transition process as it comes to the Student Assistance Commission. That will be comprised of student financial aid officers from the various institutions, representatives from the actual constituents who receive these resources and their advocates in the student associations, as well as child care experts. We would propose, much like DHS, to run this program in a very parallel fashion to our Oregon Opportunity Grant program, where we work in very close partnership with each institution's financial aid office for the disbursement of the funds. That then joins this resource with the rest of the resources that institution is making available for that student's educational costs. It folds it in with the federal and state financial aid packages and any resources that are coming from that institution. So they're really looking at the full spectrum of what the needs are for that student's attendance at school. I think I'll leave it at that, except Marge and I, we are former DHS colleagues, so up until 2 months ago, we were part of the same organization. So you know, collaboration in this regard is going to be a very simple process for us to have. In looking at the bill, there is one other small item that we would probably propose to be considered for the amendment, and that is on page 2, line 43. There is a specific reference in the bill for it being only eligible for nonprofit institutions. And we do know that there are some current recipients of the resources who are attending vocational technical schools that are profit institutions. And if it's the committee's desire to continue the current group of recipients, we would need to add in also for-profit educational facilities as well. With that, I'd be glad to entertain any questions from the committee.
Thank you. And when you say continue with the current group of recipients, do you mean the individuals that you're currently funding through this child care grant or the schools which they're attending, or both?
The Department of Human Services currently has some students who are receiving aid through the daycare program as they're administering it who are attending private for-profit technical schools. And in order to not disrupt their education, we would need to amend the bill in that one small regard.
Could you tell us whether you'll be delivering or directing the funds directly to the student, or does it go to the student's school where they will be attending or are attending?
Madam Chair, it will be a combination of both. We would not be making payments directly to the daycare providers, but instead working through the institution that the student is attending, having it deposited to their account in that institution for the purpose of their being able to pay their daycare costs. So it would run parallel to how we do this with the Oregon Opportunity Grant, where, again, we're making a payment to that institution on behalf of a particular student recipient.
Thank you. Questions? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So actually, I think if we just deleted the word nonprofit, then it would read any two-year or four-year generally accredited institution of higher education. We don't need to use profit or nonprofit.
Madam Chair, Representative March, I'm not sure some of these institutions that are for-profit may not be actually granting degrees, but instead a certificate for some sort of program. So we would probably need to look at that in order to make sure that we were still addressing that.
So, well, then adding for-profit wouldn't clarify it either.
Correct. You're right.
Okay. So basically any institution that is eligible for federal student aid.
That would probably be the best way in which to cover it, Madam Chair and Representative March.
Thank you.
Representative Lim.
And even though it's a small amount, how much is goes to the public institution, how much is goes to the private institutions? Any ideas?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, I'm not sure about how the distribution has occurred in the past with the $1 million. That might be a question that Ms. Reinhart would be.
I'm looking to see if
when it comes to the Oregon Opportunity Grant, by far and away, the vast majority of the funds are going to students who are in the Oregon University system and the community college system. A much smaller proportion of the funds goes to students attending the private independent colleges.
Okay. Then my suggestion is it should be an appropriate percentage instead of, I suspect it mostly going to the public institution, but maybe a private institution might be left out. You know, even though it's all inclusive. And the second question I might have, how long could they receive this fund while attending school? Is it 1 year, maximum 2 years?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, currently as the program, the Oregon Opportunity Grant is administered by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. A student's eligibility for that program is over a four-year period, so it's either 12 quarters or 8 semesters that a student might receive that assistance. I'm not sure if there's been a timeline for the daycare program.
Chair Flores and Representative Lim, it's my understanding that the criteria is a full-time student working toward a 2 or 4 year degree.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Shields.
Just to clarify my understanding, you're saying right now that child care subsidy can be used in private for-profit colleges and training schools as well. And you just want to make that change to make it congruent with what current law is.
Yeah, Chair Flores and Representative Shields, I think that's accurate. I guess the way the program is set up now and the way that it would continue is it really is a service. I want to make clear it is a service to the student, not to the school. So it can be used for people who are attending public or private, you know, proprietary or not schools, but it really is for our program, it's based around student eligibility and a benefit to the student.
Thank you.
With the additional corrections that would need to be included, I'm going to request that y'all coordinate with Representative Dalto and Morgan Cowling to get the language that you will be happy with and everybody thinks that all the bases are covered. So I'm going to put it back on you. We have any further questions here? No?
Thank you
very much. Brian Clem and Julie Suhanek.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Clem. I'm the chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And I don't want to take a lot of your time, but just to explain to you how this came about from our perspective. We held budget hearings during the last interim all over Oregon, and I think it was in Salem, actually. Some students and the staff of the Oregon Student Association came to us and asked us if we would consider, as a commission, supporting movement. So we directed our staff to work with DHS to see if it was something that was doable. And for us, our belief is that our organization is uniquely focused at finding barriers to people going to college and destroying them. And so our goal is to, whether it's child care costs, whether it's their tuition costs, we try and remedy those through our private scholarship activities that we do with donors, through the grant program that the state legislature has enacted. And to us, it's a natural fit. But if you're trying to go to school and you're trying to think about these problems that are stopping you, that you have one place, one phone number to call and say, what do you all have that might help me in this situation? So it's a natural for what we believe the strengths of our commission are, and we're very supportive of the change, and we're very thankful to DHS and to Margie Lau, our exec director, for being able to negotiate kind of a transition plan so no one's lost in the cracks.
Thank you, Ms. Suhanek.
Hi. For the record, my name is Julie Suhanek. I'm Government Relations for the Oregon Community College Association, which represents the 17 community colleges in Oregon and also represents over 330,000 Oregonians. We're here to testify in support of House Bill 2554 for three major reasons. One, we believe that by moving it to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, we will provide students with access to a public input process that will allow them to directly impact the policy that would form how this money is distributed to each of those students. And we think that's very important. We know that our student families are facing dual financial barriers and with childcare costs, which often outpace the cost of even tuition. According to the Annie Casey Foundation, the cost of childcare per year, the average is about $4,000. So that's nearly, not anymore, but it's almost double the tuition at community colleges here in Oregon. So that's a great concern for us. The second thing is we do think the Oregon Student Assistance Commission is a great fit because it is an education and student-focused agency. When you look at their mission, their focus is not just education, but on student families and providing diversity. And we think that student families, student parents bring a great diversity to the classroom and to the campuses that are representative of our community colleges. And finally, just to wrap up in terms of the bill, is that we believe that the child care program is a education-focused financial aid program that deals with child care. And we think, therefore, it should be housed in the Oregon Student Assistance Commission as well, because that is the state agency that has the mission for scholarships and grants in Oregon. And this would allow students to just be able to go to the one-shop place and get their financial aid versus having the confusion that often they find themselves with the Department of Human Services and having to go through that process as well. We would be in support of the amendment, with the exception of the delaying the date is fine. We do have a concern about opening the door to providing the grant to for-profit institutions. We would be able to work with that grant if it provided those dollars to those institutions if they were degree granting, if they were Oregon-based, and if they provided 3% of their own institutional revenue for financial aid. There are great concerns about using dollars, public dollars, for for-profit agencies. The primary goal of those institutions is to raise profits for their stakeholders. We've had this conversation several times in the legislature over the inclusion of for-profit institutions in the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program. We have a limited amount of funds for $1 million, and we believe that with public dollars, they should be going to public institutions and not-for-profit institutions whose mission is primary education and not to put dollars back into their stakeholders' pockets. We also are concerned because, as many of you probably are well aware in the news, that there has been a lot of question about the credibility and the reputation of the for-profit industry overall. While we think that there are some institute, well, we think that it's often probably a case of birds of a feather flock together. We are concerned about some of the fraud and the fraudulent use of financial aid dollars and also the marketing that's used to get students there and leave them with debt loan. I don't know if, how many of you caught, but there was a great 60-minute story about 2 or 3 weeks ago that really discussed about students taking on $30, $50 million worth of debt for a degree that was primarily useless in the marketplace. So we do have concerns about adding them in there with a wide open door and would be supportive of that amendment with those three conditions. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions for this panel? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, as this gets handled through the grant process of OSAC, Oregon Student Assistance Commission, will it affect the other monies that the student might be eligible for through loans and other subsidies? Might it cut down their ability to get tuition grants and so on because of other money coming in?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I think I'll check and nail this down for sure for you. I had experience when I was a student body president of Oregon State dealing with child care block grants that the campus did, and those weren't factored into their financial aid packages, but why don't I just make sure that it's not going to do that?
And you could find out and respond through Mr. Keller, please.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Additional questions?
I will clarify the questions that the representative Bellum asked concerning the youth. Someone mentioned is serving about 200 families, and then my simple math is about $5,000 per families, and you just mentioned the $4,000 per person, and so to me it doesn't match. Ways. $200,000 gone then. If it's $4,000 per family, the 200 should be the $800,000, not $1 million. Where's $200,000?
The figure that I use, Chair Flores, Representative Lynn, the figure that I used was just an average nationwide cost of child care to provide the example that child care often exceeds the cost of education for students going to school, and so therefore it is a valid financial barrier for a lot of student parents who are seeking an education. It's not like the woman from the representative from the Department of Human Services spoke, the grant here in Oregon varies.
Okay, so you said average out.
Mm-hmm. And it's a national average, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Dahl.
Point of clarification, the formula that I used was wrong. It's on a biennium, which would divide the figure in half. Budget to actual, and the budget was not constant, so it would be actual students served to half the budget. So mm-hmm. I'll wait for that information when it comes, and I'm sure it'll be a lot smaller than the figure I used. Mm-hmm.
You might like to know that he wrote out a story problem to substantiate his Representative Roblin.
And also part of that story problem is that this is per family, and the 4,000 is per child, and some of those families have more than one child. So mm-hmm. that adds to your story problem.
Would that be considered piling on?
Madam Chair, would you like to kind of have a range of grant sizes? Is that sort of, you know, what the range
it
is?
It might be instructive.
I think so.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And I would ask, Julie, if you would be sure to coordinate with the others in regard to your concerns on the dash ones and so on and so on. Goes without saying. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jessica Scott, Betty Haas, House, and Marcia Kelly. Let's see, Jessica.
Okay. Chair Flores, members of the Education Committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Jessica Scott. I'm a full-time student at Portland State University, and I'm also a single mom of a very busy two-year-old, Maya. I don't know if you saw her. There she is. I'm here to talk to you about my experiences as a student and as a mother. Specifically, I would like to talk to you about what I see as the benefits of moving the student child care program from the Department of Human Services to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I do not receive assistance from the student child care program. In fact, I did not know about the program until the Oregon Student Association brought it to my attention. This simple fact highlights the division between DHS and student populations. Many students are not familiar enough with DHS to understand how it can be a resource to them. For a student parent who is balancing schoolwork, family life, and often financial hardship, any additional steps make it less likely that we will receive support. When I applied for financial aid, I made the assumption that the student aid I was eligible for would be offered through my financial aid package, administered through OSAC. I now know that this is not the case, but I'm sure that there are many students who do not know this. Integrating the student child care program into OSAC would create a seamless process for student parents seeking assistance. As you can imagine, having a child and going to school does not leave a lot of extra energy for navigating multiple government agencies. OSAC is more in tune with the unique combination of the personal and financial needs of students and could better serve this constituency. Hearing that the student child care program has been consistently near the top of DHS cut list is very troubling. Student parents are less able to absorb financial changes, and any change to a student's already precarious financial aid situation seriously jeopardizes our ability to finish our education. The student child care program is critically important to those who receive it, and it promises to make a large difference in the lives of potential recipients. I ask you for your support in moving the program to the OSAC. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Scott? Maya, do you have any questions? She's a beautiful girl.
Thank you
very much. You may choose.
No. Oh, okay. Whatever. I'm Betty House with American Association of University Women. And we are very interested in having this program move for numerous reasons that Marcia will go into as well. We do have many branches that have individual scholarships. And in another life, I also have a hat on that is Delta Kappa Gamma, which is an honorary educational sorority in this state. And their chapters also, they're primarily interested for teachers to have individual scholarships. And many times it has come to our attention that the program that the person has set up for themselves, whether it be an elderly parent or another person to take care of their child, that person has gotten sick or some other reason has come up and that person's not available for child care. That leaves the person receiving the scholarship or grant money, with the ability to go to college, but not the ability to take their child with them. And therefore, they lose the money, they lose the education, they lose the opportunity. So it's very important for us to see that this program is, as the lady said, available to the student and that the student knows where to go to get this program. DHS is not a common place for a student to look for assistance. They will take and look other places and relatives and for other help. So this being a one-stop shopping opportunity, and colleges will have that information for them, is much better than having them trying to research it on their own. So we're very interested in the follow-through here so that the students we offer our scholarship and grant monies to, and there are many, many organizations, fraternals, sororities, and so on, universities that offer this money, but when the student can't take the money, it's available to them, but they can't use it because of a child care problem, then all is lost, and our communities are lost as well because we just lost a very valuable citizen. So we're very interested in having this changed.
Thank you.
I'm open for questions.
Ms. Kelly?
Chair Flores and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. One of our members is the American Association of University Women. The other members are Delta Kappa Gamma, which is an educational sorority of both retired and current educators, the Oregon National Association for Women, the Salem Young Women's Christian Association, the Oregon Older Women's League, the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, as well as individual members. So we have about 8,000 to 10,000 members included in all of those. As Betty said, we're interested in making sure that women get education. We all know that children do best when they are in homes where education is valued, and the long-term implications for our society are helped with education. The current U.S. Group of people seeking higher education is about 16 million, according to the American Council on Education. And unlike what it might have been like 35 years ago when I was in college, the population is different. 60% of the people who are looking for education in this country are considered non-traditional students. 40% are 25 or older, and that means that 3 out of 4 are not go to school right out of college, you know, no encumbrances, no kids. There are a fair number of people who have children. They work, and so the child care is very important to them. We want to reiterate that putting the Oregon Student Assistance Commission as a point of reference for people for looking for student aid is really sensible. It's sort of like putting all your planning in a city into a one-stop shopping place for development is a good idea, too. It just cuts down. It makes people expert on what they're doing, and it also gives other people that access in the one place. I would also echo on behalf of the American Association of University Women the concerns that we would have for the for-profit non-accredited, non-degree granting institutions. We want to get people educated so that they can participate in this new economy of using your mind, and we think that it's most important for this type of aid to remain in those areas where we can take the advantage of that. And I would offer to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either of these panelists?
Chair Flores, I'd like to make one other comment.
Yes.
You'll notice that I tried very hard, as did Marcia, not to use acronyms, because we use that funny one with American Association of University Women of Oregon, so we don't have to say the whole thing, because I didn't want to come up with my purse.
And we, well, I'm not sure I'm thankful for that or not.
March and I laid the rules down very severely.
Okay. They did the groundwork.
I could add one more thing. I didn't want to come up with my purse either, but the Salem branch of the American Association of University Women of Oregon did contribute $8,000 this year to our association educational foundation, which does make grants to people, especially people, minorities, and women seeking non-traditional careers.
Thank you very much, ladies. was there anyone interested and have a desire to speak on Health Bill 2554? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Health Bill 2554. And, colleagues, I will remind you that the Friday hearing has been canceled, so we will gather again as a unit on Monday, March 7th. Representative Farr.
May I make one comment for the record, Madam Chair?
Please.
I would like everyone to note that I went through an entire committee meeting without asking a single question.
And that is a red letter day. I think we should all pitch in on your behalf. Our committee will be adjourned.